I'm told that the last thing that was learned yesterday was the Mishnah and Samachay, Amra Aleph and Amra Beis, but not the Gemara, so I guess we may as well start over with the Mishnah and work from there.
Timing. We didn't even start yet.
We finished, actually. Yeah. So we're holding Samachay, Amra Aleph, the Mishnah at the bottom. Continuing on, we started the parak talking about when you sell a house, what structures are and aren't included with it. Now we're continuing on what other kinds of things that usually come with a house are and aren't sold with it. Again, Samachvav is officially the day, but it's fine. Samachvav is a short flat. We'll easily cover it, Rav Hashem. The basic rule I'm sure whoever was here on that day pointed out, Shlomi Newbort, I think, pointed out that the general rule with all these things is that kol minig ha-medina, but we're talking about over here where there is no particular minig ha-medina. What are the rules? So the Mishnah says, ha-mocher et ha-bayis, you sell a house, mocher et ha-delis, along with it, you sold the door, because the door is attached to the ground. And by the way, actually, even if the door doesn't happen to be attached right now, even if it's all the hinges at the moment, but a door is normally attached to the ground.
The question about the mafteach.
Ava loyas the mafteach, right, but not the key, which we're going to talk about in the Gemara Kavua versus not. And we'll talk in the Gemara what exactly a mafteach Kavua versus non-Kavua means anyway.
Mafteach means key?
A mafteach means a key, yeah, but we're going to talk about what it means Kavua or not. We'll get to that. Okay. Mocher the mafteach. That's also, for example, when you sell the house, automatically you sell with it a mortar that you have there to be able to grind things in. It's something that if it's attached to the ground. We're talking about in the house. You sold the house, so you have inside the house there's a mortar attached to the ground. We'll talk about in the Gemara what sort of mortar we're dealing with exactly, in what way is it attached.
Sounds like Hilchos Mikvayos is coming up.
Yes, indeed, actually, yep. Avaloyas and Metatelis, but not a movable, mortar, because that's not considered included with that. Macher is Itzroibil, Avaloyas Akelis. You sell the Itzroibil, but not the Kelis. So what are those? The Rashbam explains that the Itzroibil is the ring around a millstone, which stays in its place permanently. And the Kelis would be the funnel. It could be metal, could be wood, whatever, I don't know. But the kelis, according to the Rashbam, would be the funnel that you pour the grain into that funnel, and then it goes on between the millstones and gets ground up. There's different other
ways. The
mills are horizontal, usually. We learned back in the second paragraph. You have a large stone, and then you have a smaller stone on top of it.
So you take the smaller stone out? No.
So according to the Rashbam, the point is that the millstone itself, the both millstones stay there. According to the Rashbam, we're talking about specifically the things around the millstone, the things.
The wheat going to go.
Because it goes because the top millstone has a hole in it. So you have a funnel above that top one, and therefore the grain goes into the wheat, goes into there and gets in. Anyway, so according to the Rashbam, both of those, the Itzroibel and the Kelis, are not the millstones themselves, but the things around them, the circular thing around it versus the funnel that funnels the grain into it. Rabbeinu Gershom explains differently that actually the Itzroibel means the bottom millstone, and the Kelis means the top millstone, where the point is the bottom millstone is attached to the ground, the top one is not. Veloyas atanu, veloyas akirayim. Also, you don't sell along with the house. You don't sell an oven or ringe, because they're metalplin. The Rashbam brings that there's a different gear, some mach atanu, mach akirayim. He says, I don't understand. Well, maybe that's talking about if they're attached to the ground. Tosfos talks about it. Other Rishonim also talk about that. Maybe indeed we are talking about that if an oven or a range are attached to the ground, which typically they were in those days, they'd build the oven and then they'd attach it to the ground with clay, then yes, maybe those are considered to be sold as well. Now, this is all, if you just sold in the house stam without specifying what is and isn't included. But if you said, I'm selling you the house and everything that's inside it, and then all of those things that we just mentioned in the Mishnah are considered to be sold. Now, the Rashbam goes on to point out that does not mean, though, a house could have all kinds of metalkalin in it. A house could have towels, and it can have linens, and it can have dishes and whatnot. Those aren't necessarily included unless you were to specify all the metalkalin within it. The Rashbam says the reason is like this. There's two logical reasons, he says, why we should say that. Number one is, you can say there's a difference between you have things that are more bustle to the house. They're things that not only they may not be fixed to the ground, but they're also things that aren't typically moved from one place to another. Let's say, for example, in the Mishnah over here, when we have the example of a machtesheh mitzvah, we had a movable mortar. It's not something attached to the ground, so fine. If you just sell the house down without specifying it's not sold, if you say though, fine, you're including that because it's something heavy and it's not something typically moved from one house to another. But it wouldn't include, for example, the dishes and the linens and whatnot, which can easily be picked up and moved from one house to another. That's one reason that Rashbam says. The other logic is, just because a person is selling his house doesn't necessarily mean he's moving out of the neighborhood. He may still be living in the neighborhood. He may still want these things. I'm still reserving that, for example, the dishes in the house, I'm reserving. I'm keeping for myself. I'll come over when I want to use them and take them in and out and whatever. Eventually, in other words, even though he said, I'm selling you the house and everything in it, doesn't necessarily mean, again, hakolka minigam adina. If the minigam adina is, you say nowadays, you sell somebody a fully furnished house, for example, yeah, it includes the, you know, if you sell him and you say, I'm selling you everything that's in the house as is, then yeah, it includes the dishes and everything. But we're talking about when there's no such minigam adina. So, for example, the idea is the guy may well be living still in town, and he figures he'll come over and use the dishes when he wants to, let's say. As opposed to, the Rashbam says, we're going to have later on in the parak, as we go through the next few Mishnayos, we're going to have when you sell a chotzer, then it includes more metalcelin. And when you sell a city, we'll have yet another Mishnah in our parak. When you sell somebody a city, we're not talking a city like New York, right? And you're talking a city like Postville, maybe, you know. Conceivably, one person could own the whole thing. You know?
Well, there was a city for sale a couple of years ago. A whole city.
Okay.
Totally reminded me of the Gemara.
Okay, I mean, look, you know,
they're paying you to take
it. In halacha terminology, a city doesn't have to be all that big. In Hilchos Eruvin, for example, I think that a city can be defined as a place that has, what is it, three chaseros with two houses each or something. That tiny little village or something. Yeah, anyway. The point is, so the Rashbam explains, according to either of these explanations, that can work. Then it includes everything, even, for example, the animals and the avodim and the wheat and the barley and whatnot. So according to either logic, one way of looking at it is, the larger the thing you're selling, the more is included by default. So a house is a small thing, a chotzer is larger, and a city is larger than that. Or the logic is, a person selling a house, he's not necessarily moving away, but a person sells a chotzer, he's moving to another chotzer, obviously. He's selling a city, he's moving to another city. Therefore, there's no reason to think that he would have left his dishes or his wheat or barley or what have you behind. Anyway. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Lema masnissin b'leiket a mayor. Should we say that our Mishnah does not go like Reb Meir? Because we have later in this, we have actually in the next parak, that Reb Meir says that if you sell somebody a vineyard, then automatically there goes with it the things that are needed for the vineyard, which the Rashbam explains based on the Gemara over there. The point we're talking about mainly is you have sticks in a vineyard. The branches of them are very weak. They won't stand up on their own. So you usually have you sometimes will have sticks that you put underneath them to hold them up. We'll learn about that later in our parak as well. So if you sell a vineyard, then automatically you're selling with it the sticks as well. So by that logic, therefore, a mayor would say that when you're selling something, you're selling everything that's normally used for the thing itself. So the Rashbam explains that the Gemara's question, therefore, thinking that the Mishnah is not like a mayor, is based on the business about the mortar that we said in our Mishnah. Why, according to the mayor, you should, when you're selling a house, the mortar, an unattached mortar should be included, because the mortar is something that you need all the time in the house. According to Tosfos, rather, the question is from the key. We said in the Mishnah you haven't sold the key. Well, why not, according to the mayor? The Gemara says, I feel the tamer of mayor. No, you could answer that maybe the Mishnah does even go like a mayor. Because the difference is that the mayor is talking over there about the sticks in the vineyard. The difference is they're kavua in the sense, they're not attached to the ground, but you never take them out of that particular vineyard. As opposed to machteshes, a mortar, sometimes you might lend it out. You might lend it out to somebody else sometimes.
Why is the mayor speaking so specifically, rather than saying generically, you don't take movables out of a cell?
Because, no, but that's the thing. He's saying specifically that the context over there is we're talking about if you sell a vineyard, what exactly is and isn't included.
Right. So to imply that other than a vineyard, you do take it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, so we're saying, in other words, that Rameo is generalizing, but he's saying that. Well, that's the thing. That's why we're thinking that our Mishnah is not like him. But now we're saying that Rameo himself would distinguish between those things attached to the ground, which are definitely sold. That's what our Mishnah is saying. There are things that are not attached to the ground and are commonly, or not commonly, but whatever, they can be sometimes moved from one place to another, like a mortar. You usually keep it in the house, but occasionally you might lend it out. And then you have these sticks in the vineyard where they're not attached to the ground, but you would never remove them from the vineyard. And that's what that's the kind of thing Rameo is saying is included.
So that's what I'm asking.
Okay.
Is it specific to the vineyard?
So no, that's the thing. He's saying anything which is like those sticks in a vineyard. But only
and all the rest?
But no. All the rest is not. If it's something like a mortar in our Mishnah, that's a thing.
Right.
As opposed to a mortar is not something fixed at all, because not only it's not attached to the ground, but you might well lend it out. Again, according to Tosfos, the question is not so much from the mortar, but from the key. Okay, so the question is, why? When the Mishnah mentions, it says you sold the door, but not the key. The key has to be, in that sense, similar to the door. Otherwise, the Mishnah itself should have distinguished. You would have expected the Mishnah to distinguish between a fixed key and an unfixed key. Doesn't that mean then that just like the door is fixed, you don't lend out your door to somebody else? So also a key must be that it's talking about that it's fixed in place, in the sense that Rashbam says it means, for example, there are keys that are never removed from the lock. For example, the type he says that they have in villages. Apparently they have some kind of key in those days.
So you call that a doorknob.
Yeah, okay, in modern terms, maybe you'd call it a doorknob. Fine, I guess they're in villages, they figure it's safe. Okay, whatever, the point is that it's something that, you should argue that if we're saying that you sold the door but not the key, the point is even that type of key, which is permanently fixed into the door, like a doorknob or whatever, and yet the Mishnah is saying that not. There are other Rishonim explain that we're not necessarily talking about that. The Rimigash and a bunch of other Rishonim say that when we say Kriya or not Kriya, as far as the key, we don't mean, like the Rashbam says, attached permanently to the door like a doorknob versus not. What we mean is rather you have, like nowadays, keys that are specific to a certain lock, and then you have keys that are more general, skeleton keys like for the old style locks, or you find in different places, you find in different places in Shabbos, for example, you find that keys sometimes were made out of a wooden piece with little pieces of wood or bone stuck into it to fit a particular lock. So then the key itself is something generic that says, and then you'd put in the little pieces of wood or whatever into them to fit a specific lock. So that's what we mean. Kriya would mean a key that is specific to one particular lock. Like Kriya would mean a key that's generic to all locks. Again, the Mishnah is not making that distinction. So evidently, according to the Mishnah, you haven't sold any kind of key, whether it's specific to this lock or not.
Oh, so Kviya.
So Kviya, according to that, would be something that is specifically used for this one versus
for this one door.
Which, again,
Kviya would be one that can open every door in the village.
Or whatever.
But removable in both circumstances.
Right.
Unlike
the other definition, right. But then it would be similar in that sense to the sticks in the vineyard. The sticks, in principle, you could take them from one vineyard and bring them to another, but you don't. You keep them in one vineyard for as long as that vineyard is gone. What?
All of them will fall down.
Which? All of what?
The vineyards. The vineyard, if you take away all the sticks.
Well, yeah, okay.
All the grapes will fall down.
Yeah, okay, but you might... Okay, yeah, I mean, you could maybe sell your sticks to somebody else and buy other ones. Okay, but whatever, you don't. Okay. It could also be, for example, you know, when it comes to the dinim of Menachas and Nesachim, there's actually today's Shlosha Prakim of Rambam, is the grapevines that they would use for Menachas were davka the kind that were trailing on the ground. Those, I guess, produce better quality wine or grapes or whatever. So maybe you could conceivably have that a person up until now has been putting their grapes up on sticks or whatnot, and now they want to start using it for Nesachim. But you don't. Practically speaking, a person sticks to the... Okay, it's clear, evidently, then we have to say that, yes, our Mishnah is not like Rameyer. Rameyer would have to make that distinction between a key that is Kavua versus not, but our Mishnah does not. So, okay, our Mishnah is not like Rameyer. Okay. I mean, usually Stam Mishnah could have made it, but every rule has exceptions. Tanarabban. Hamoicher is a bias, mocher is a delis. The person sells the house along
with. To know who the Mishnah is from.
No, as well we know, we just know it's not like Reb Meir. We don't have any specific other Tana to.
Not like Reb Meir.
Stam Mishnah or Meir. So, but the Stam Mishnah is not like Reb Meir. We want to know that. But other than that, we don't know who it's like. We just know that. Okay, I mean,
it doesn't bring any.
No, doesn't mention anybody else. Well, we're going to see in the next piece of Gemara after this one, we're going to see the possibility whether we're going to see whether our Mishnah fits according to Rabbi Eliezer. We'll work that out. What were you going to say?
Seems like it'll be harder to figure out that who it's like than that it's not like Rabbi Meir.
Yes, because you'd have to find an explicit Mishnah or Braisa or something that says, yeah. Okay. Turn it up on Hamoicher Sabayis, Machar Sadelis. You sell a house, and along with it, you sold the door. That's a Neger and the bolt. Which goes into which is attached to the wall and then use it to bolt the door closed. That's a manual and the lock, which is attached to the door. I've a lawyer some afteach, but not the key of the various kinds of keys that we just described. Macher some afteach sachakuka. You also, along with the house, you automatically sell a mortar that is engraved in. What is engraved means, the Rashbam says, means, for example, you have a piece of rock sticking out of the wall. You carve that out to make a mortar. So now that's it. What?
It's a mortar.
A mortar is something you put like you put spices or grain or whatever in it, and then you use a stick called a pestle to grind it up.
Pestle.
Pestle. The T is pestle. Silent.
Oh,
you're kidding. The T is silent all these years.
What?
So
the point. Because the point is, a mortar is basically a keli shaped like this. So now you have three different ways that you could have it. You could have where, like, as the Rashbam is describing over here, where it to begin with part of the structure of the house. It was always a piece sticking out from the wall. Now you carved it to make a mortar. Versus the opposite extreme would be where it's loose and you can just move it from one place to another. And in between, you would have a case where you made it as a separate keli and then attached it to the ground.
How do you call mortar and pestle in Lashon HaShulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Shabbos? Or
so we call it a machteshes and an eli.
Okay.
Anyway, let's continue. Okay, so you sold a machteshes chakukah, a loyas hakvua, but not one that is just fixed in place, meaning that you made it as a separate keli and then attached it to the floor or the wall or what have you.
Seems a bit obvious. I mean, what is he going to do?
No, because Sakir,
he's going to take this huge stone where the Machteshet is. And
no, but that you would think. As a matter of fact, the Rashbam says this Braisa is actually not like our Mishnah. Because so far, the Chachamim of our Braisa are not like the Mishnah, because our Mishnah was only saying that a Machteshet She'ena Kruah, type number three, where you, remember, there's three different types, right? You can have where, to begin with, part of the wall. You can have where it's a separate keli and then you attached it, and then you can have where it's a separate keli and not attached at all. Our Mishnah is saying only that third type you don't sell, implying that the first two you did sell. The Braisa seems to be saying only the first type is sold, the other two are not. Even the one that's now attached to the wall, but it didn't start out attached, is also not sold. And you could come anytime you want, you, the original seller of the house, could come anytime you want and pry it off the wall or off the floor or whatever and take it with you. Okay. Again, continues the Braisa, you sold, when you sell the house, you sell the Etzroibil, but not the Kelas. So the various definitions that we said before, the circle around the millstones, or actually I forgot to mention also, there's another explanation, I think, that Amnam says that the Etzroibil is the frame that the millstone stands on.
The ring.
Well, the Rashbam said it's a ring around it, but the Rambam seems to understand that it's something more like a wooden frame underneath it.
Hmm.
But it's something more attached to the ground. Avaloyas akelus, but not the funnel or the top millstone or whatever. Loyas atana avaloyas akirayim. You also have not sold along with the house an oven or a range if they're not attached to the ground. Some are showing them actually say even if they are attached to the ground, maybe it's not considered a permanent attachment. Okay. Avaloyas erichayim, and you also have not sold with the house the actual millstones themselves. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer Oyma call him a chubel akaka, areo kakaka. But Rabbi Eliezer says, no, anything that's attached to the ground is considered like part of the ground.
Regardless of the attachments?
Okay, so the Rashbam says that specifically Rabbi Eliezer is actually arguing only about the one case of machteshes kvua. Again, those three different types of mortars. Rabbi Eliezer would be the one, like our Mishnah, who's saying that type number two, where it's a separate keli, which you then attach to the floor or the wall or whatever, would be sold along with the house. according to the Rashbam, Rabbi Eliezer would agree with everything else the Chachamim said. Other Rishonim say that not. Other Rishonim say that Rabbi Eliezer might be arguing more generally about other things as well. This man sha'amalehu v'chol mashvaseicha continues the Braise. If you say, when you're selling the house, I'm selling you the house and everything in it, harekul mechurin, then all those things are considered included, like we said in the Mishnah. Either way, though, even if you say I'm selling you the house and everything in it, it doesn't go along with a pit or a drus, as we learned before in the Gemara. A pit is something that's dug into the ground. A drus is a structure that's partly above ground, built into the ground, right? Or a side room, a lean-to, or whatever. Because, like we learned earlier in the parak, at the beginning of the parak, those are considered they have a chashivus of their own. So now we're going to get into what you were saying, Aaron. We are going to get into dinim and mikvahs from here and for a little bit. So, and we come to it by way of this business of something being created as a separate keli and then attached to the ground, like we were talking about.
Mikvahs, what is the definitive on all this?
So you actually have a machlokas rishonim whether in the end the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer or the chachamim of our braisa.
And you have
different opinions. I believe the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that is like the chachamim of our Mishnah, which is that. It depends whether it's attached to the ground or not. Okay. All right. So now to mikvahs. One of the dinim of mikvahs is that mayim shuvim passels a mikvah. Now you have the Rashbam has an understanding of the mayim shuvim business. Mayim shuvim means water that's drawn in a keli. The water of a mikvah has to be something that flows naturally. The Rashbam has an understanding of it, which is even if you have a fully kosher mikvah, 40 sub, if you have enough mayim shuvim get into it, that then you have more mayim shuvim than the original rainwater, it will become possible. Pretty much everybody else disagrees with the Rashbam on that. They say that the soul of mayim shuvim is if you have to begin with a mikvah that's made out of mayim shuvim, or if you had then it'll be possible. If it was to begin with made out of mayim shuvim. Or also, you have if you have a mikveh that contains less than 40 saw of rainwater, and then 3 logim of mayim shuvim get into it, then it will be possible. But once you have, according to pretty much everybody except for the Rashbam, once you have a mikveh full 40 saw, doesn't matter how much mayim shuvim goes into it after that.
And that's the halacha.
That's the halacha, yeah.
So 40 shares of mayim.
So once you have 40 saw of rainwater, so all mikvahs nowadays are usually made. You have two different reservoirs. Anyway, you have a reservoir made from him, and then in Chabadska mikvahs, you have the mikvah that we toivel in on top of that one. In Veltisha ones, you have them next to each other. That's a whole issue that we're not going to get into right now. But whatever it is, you have then the two boris are attached together by a hole. Which then it makes it that now the drawn water.
The bottom started that.
What?
I think they're next to each other.
Nah, it does that long before them.
It does that before them.
It's not the place to get into it right now. There is a whole discussion among Achronim about the pros and cons of one versus the other. You can look in the back of the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. There's a discussion about the short thing from over there from Rabbi Yaakov Landau about how the Rebbe Rashab told him that the best way to have his bur al-gali bur. Ber 11 wrote an entire sefer on the subject of mikvahs according to Chabad, and he has a long discussion about the advantages of that.
Not on that, but the top one has to be hot so that the water doesn't mix.
So that's another part of it also, right? That's an important part of it also, right? If the top one is hot and the bottom one is cold, then they're not going to mix easily.
That's even better than the other.
So that's better than one next to the other, where they can more easily mix. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, whatever. Like I say, let's not get into all that right now. But the bottom line is Once the halacha is not like the Rashbam, and that the halacha is like everybody else, which is that once you have 40 saw rainwater, then it doesn't matter how much mayim shuvim gets into it, as long as you have the original 40 saw rainwater. It is true, everybody will agree, and that was also machlokas rishonim actually about the finer details of it, but anyway, that if you have, we learned about this way back in Yevamos, if you were to put in mayim shuvim and then take out and then take out some of the mixture and then put in more and then take out some more, then eventually the mixture will become fossil, which actually is another part of the problem with the rainwater and the Miami sugar mixing, which is, again, part of the advantage of burr agave burr, is that then you have less mixing, so there's less chance of that happening, of there ever being less than 40 saw rainwater in the bottom reservoir.
You could do a scientific study.
Okay. Anyway.
If you put the dye.
If you put dye. Okay, whatever. But that's how it is. When you have the bottom one is full, the top one is of cold water, and the top one is full of hot water, they're not going to mix very much. And since also the bottom reservoir is because you keep on emptying out the every so often, you empty out the top one and refill it. But also you keep on heating up the top one, so it always the top one always.
The top one is always heated.
Yes. Yeah. You ever gone into a cold mikveh?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, but generally speaking, no. Okay, that happens. Okay,
Bruno was ice.
All right, onward. Let's continue. All right. So then, part of what makes a mayim shuvim involves a water being drawn in a keli. So what's considered a keli for that purpose? That's what we're going to get into. Turn it up on. Sinir shachakokay losayf kvay. If you have a pipe that first you carved it out and then you attached it to the ground. So the Rashbam explains that what we mean is a plain old pipe. If you first made it...
Hold on, this is the beginning of the end?
Yeah. According to the Rashbam, we're just talking about a plain old pipe. You have these two ways that you could conceivably make it. You could first, or doesn't even have to be a pipe. Doesn't even have to be doesn't even have to have a circular cross section. It could be just a channel. But you could have one way is that first hakaka, you carved it out, you shaped it, and then you attached it to the ground. Or you could have you attached it to the ground first, and then you shaped it. According to the Rashbam, that will make the difference. According to Tosfos and many other Rishonim, if it's a pipe, then there's no problem either way. If it's a plain old pipe, then there's no problem because it's not going to hold any water in the first place. According to them, the problem is, when we say hakaka over here, we mean, suppose you have a pipe where you carved out like a trap in it to be able to, you carved out a lower down area. You have a pipe going over here, and then you carved out an area over here, not a hole per se, it's not a hole, you don't want the water to flow out, but a lower area, like a trap.
Closed hole.
Yeah, in order that way, as the water is going through, any dirt or whatever will sink to the bottom over there in that trap. That's what we're talking about, because then it's a kli kibble, then it's a keli that can hold things. Okay. According to the Rashbam, you don't even need that. According to him, a plain old pipe would be or a plain old channel would be a problem. That passes the mikveh because it's a keli. Because that's the thing. According to the Rashbam, the problem is it's a keli before you ever attach it to the ground. It's a keli that's not metabol anything, that doesn't hold anything, because it's a pipe. It doesn't matter. That's a keli. And a keli passes the mitzvah. Again, according to Tosfos, it's not so much of the fact that it's a keli, it's the fact that it's a kli kibble that can hold something.
But we're mahadur to go like the Rashbam when we build a mikveh today, aren't we?
Yeah, well, not really necessarily. No, we use pipes, for example, when they'll have a reservoir on the roof of mikveh and then pipes to go down. One thing is, it does mention also in that Rishima from Rabbi Yaakov Landau, we do try to be careful that there shouldn't be bends in the pipes. Because if there are bends, then conceivably those could be traps, like what
so
we're describing over here.
The question of Mayan is also keli.
What do you mean Mayan?
A Mayan
is not keli. A Mayan is a spring in the ground.
No. Water that flows from a mountain into the rock and goes to a mikveh, like the Arizal.
That's not keli. That's part of the ground. So that's what we're saying. If you first attached the thing to the ground and then you hollowed it out to make a pipe, or then you carved out an area in it as a trap, like Tosfos is saying, any post also mikveh, that does not pass a mikveh. Because then it's just like making a channel in the ground. And a channel in the ground doesn't pass a mikveh. So we have to ask Mami, who is this Braisa like? When we're saying over here that this distinction between what came first, the hakokoi, the carving it out to make it into a pipe or a channel, or the kvoi, the attaching it to the ground, which came first, who is that like? Lo Rabbi Eliezer v'lo Rabbanan. That seems to be not like Rabbi Eliezer of the previous Braisa, and not like the Rabbanan who argue with him in that Braisa. So we have to ask, though, hey, Rabbi Eliezer, which opinion of Rabbi Eliezer are we referring to? Elamer Rabbi Eliezer de Bias, are you going to say that's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer that we just said as far as the Machteshes when he's selling a house, are you including the Makteshes or not? The problem with that is, maybe that's not the underlying machlokas, whether the machteshes is considered attached to the ground or not. Maybe it's just the same machlokas that we've been having throughout the perek so far, whether the mocher is mocher b'ayin yofer, whether he's generous and selling everything that could possibly be included or not. So nothing to do with the question of whether it's considered mechubal karka or not. That doesn't necessarily relate to the machlokas about the mikvah. Okay, so are we going to say then that maybe we're talking about the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer involving a beehive, where from that maybe we see that Rabbi Eliezer holds that something that's attached to the ground is considered attached to the ground, even though it was previously made as a keli, and that would contradict this braisa, which distinguishes between whether the pipe is shaped first or attached to the ground first, right? It's not, namely, we learn in a Mishnah, kaveres dvarim, if you have a beehive. At this point, we're assuming that the beehive is attached to the ground. We're going to revisit that soon in the Gemara. But for the moment, we're assuming that we mean that it's a beehive attached to the ground. Rabbi Eliezer says such a beehive is considered like land for all purposes, as far as kinyan. When you buy it, you buy it for kesef v'shtar v'chazaka. You can use it as a basis to write it because
it's
actually
a stick to the ground.
It's not a stick. It's according to what we're assuming right now. It's a box attached with mortar or with clay or whatever, with
cement.
Yeah, to the ground, yeah. So it's like karka as far as being bought, for example, for kesef v'shtar v'chazaka, that you can use it for kinyan agav. The kois vanilla prusbo, you can use that as the karka that the loiva owns. If all he has a beehive of karka, you can still use that as a basis for writing a prusbo. The enema kabelas tuma b'mekoyma, and it's not makabel tuma when it's in its place because it's attached to the ground. Exactly, because therefore it's not considered a keli. By the way, the Rashbam adds that in that case, the honey wouldn't be makabel tuma as long as the beehive is attached to the ground either, because the honey would be bottled to the beehive. And if you remove honey, if you take honey out of that beehive on Shabbos, you'd be chayv chatos, because it's like detaching something from the ground. It's like detaching something from where it normally grows in the ground. Whereas the chachamim say that it's not considered like the ground, because even though it's attached to the ground, it's still considered a keli. The ein kos v'nalei approval. And you cannot use it as a basis for writing a prusbul because you need karka for that. It will be makabel tuma even if it's standing in its place because it's keli. And if you take honey out of it on Shabbos, you potter because it's like taking it out of a keli. It's not considered to be you're taking it from the place where it grew. So maybe that's what we're saying, that thing about the pipe with the mikveh, maybe that's what we're arguing. When we say that din doesn't seem to fit according to Rabbi Eliezer, maybe we're talking about this machlokas over here. Because we see that Rabbi Eliezer over here says that a beehive that was attached to the ground is considered like the ground. So according to him, it shouldn't make a difference, even though the beehive already existed as a keli independently before it was attached to the ground. According to him, it shouldn't matter with the tzinner whether it was attached first or shaped first. The problem with that is, Hasam Kedomer Rabbi Elazar. No, Kedomer Rabbi Elazar Taima. No, because you could say that maybe in that case of a beehive, there's a special reason for Rabbi Eliezer's din. For Rabbi Eliezer's din, why he holds that a beehive is considered like part of the ground. Not even if it's attached to the ground, actually. You're assuming only if it's attached to the ground, are he and the Chachamim arguing. No, Rabbi Eliezer might hold that even a beehive that's not at all attached to the ground is considered like the ground. For a special reason that applies only to beehives.
And nothing to do with it.
Nothing to do with the attachment itself, and therefore nothing to do with the pipe. Kedama Rabbi Elazar Taima, as Rabbi Elazar gives us the reason why Rabbi Eliezer says that. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, my time is Rabbi Eliezer. What's Rabbi Eliezer's reason why he says that a beehive is considered like karka even if it's not attached to the ground? This is because you have a pasuk that says, "Vayitpalos v'yaras advash." This is the context over there. The pasuk describes over there how Shaul and his army are fighting against the Plishtim. Yonathan, Shaul's son, has gone off on his own, and he's gone first to fight the Plishtim without even anybody knowing, and now he's separated from the main body of the army. Shaul had made everybody swear that they're not. No, it started out that they're in a desperate situation. The Plishtim are badly outnumbered by the Plishtim. So Yonatan says to his arms bearer, "Let's go together, you and I, and we'll go climb up to the Plishti encampment, and then see what happens. We'll learn in Kulin that there was an issue of Nichush involved. We'll talk about over there what about the dinim of Nichush. We'll get to it eventually. Anyway, the bottom line is they start to striking out the Plishtim right and left. And then Shaul and whatever's left of his army get their act together and join in the fray. Okay, so as part of that, as the battle is going on, Shaul makes, in his capacity as king, makes everybody swear that they're going to fast for the rest of the day, and that the Eibishter should make them victorious. Yonatan hadn't heard about that. Now he's walking through the forest over there. He sees over there honey on the ground. Actually, it's interesting. Rashi over there says actually that it wasn't honey, that it was sugar cane. Mm-hmm. Because the pasuk uses the word yara sadvash, which we're quoting in our Gemara over here, which literally means the forest of honey. So Rashi explains on the pasuk that it means sugar cane, which grows from the ground. But our Gemara is understanding it to be regular bee honey. So anyway.
So that's where they take it from.
So that's the way. Yeah. So anyway, okay, the pasuk continues over there. Yonatan stuck the edge of the tip of a stick into the honey or sugar cane or whatever it is, and tasted some, and his eyes lit up again because he was starving. And everybody tells him, "You're not supposed to have been doing that. Your father told everybody to fast." Whatever. The whole story continues from there. Let's not get into it right now. We don't really have time. He didn't know, but still, whatever. Later on, at a later stage of the thing, Shaul wants to continue the battle against the Plishtim. He's not getting an answer from the Urim Batumim. Something's wrong. Turns and somebody violated the Shavua. He finds out that it was Yonatan, and then he's all ready to be mechayev missi. You disobeyed what the king said. Once you found out that I said the people convinced Shaul not to be mechayev, whatever. Anyway,
what did he do?
So in the end, that he was mechayev, but yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the pasuk says "Dichtiv Vayitpor Lo'isa B'Yaras Avash." It says that Yonatan stuck the edge of the tip of a stick into the forest of honey. And again, our Gemara is understanding it to be actual honey, not sugar cane, like Rashi says. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda darshens from that. My Yara Terlish Men of Shabbos Chayev Chatos. Just as a forest, if you were to tear something out of it on Shabbos, you'd be Chayev Chatos, because that's the Malacha of Koitzer. Abdvasha Rodu Men of Shabbos Chayev Chatos. So also honey, if you take it out of a beehive on Shabbos, you chayev chatos. And therefore, Rabbi Eliezer generalizes from that in that sense, a beehive is considered like mechubur, even if physically it's not. So it's a special din that applies only to beehives. It doesn't necessarily apply to other things.
But separate honey, not in a beehive.
No, obviously, if you have a jar of honey, you're allowed to pour from it on Shabbos. We're not talking about that. So you can't say that. So again, when we said before, when we mentioned the thing about the pipe, and we asked Lachora, that doesn't go like Rabbi Eliezer, it can't necessarily be Rabbi Eliezer of the Braisa that's selling a house, because maybe it's because he holds Mercha buying off of Mercha. Can't be the one of the beehive, because there he has a special limud from a pasuk that beehives are considered attached to the ground. Ella Rabbi Eliezer the Daf. Maybe then we're talking about rather the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer as far as a board. The Tanan, namely, we learn in a Mishnah and Kalim. If you have a board, a baker's board, at this point, the Rashbam explains that we're talking about that you use it to knead the dough on it. Then he says another explanation that maybe it means the board that's attached to the wall, that you use it as a counter to sell the bread. Anyway, at this point we're assuming in the Gemara that we're talking about a wooden board. Later on, we're going to revisit that and see that we're talking about a metal board instead. But for the moment, we figure we're talking about a wooden board. So, Dapshan Achtoimim Shekhovim Bekosel. So, if you have a wooden board that you attach to the wall, Rabbi Eliezer Matahav HaChacham Matamin. Rabbi Eliezer says it's not Makabal Tumah anymore because it's attached to the ground. The Chacham say it's still Makabal Tumah because it's not bottled to the ground. Now, the board is just like a pipe. It was shaped. It was made into a board. It was made into a keli before it was attached to the wall. And Rabbi Eliezer says that now it's bottled to the wall, and therefore it's not makabel tumah. And the Chachamim say that not. But that's what we're asking. That braisa that said before that there's a difference with the pipe in the case of the mikveh, that there's a difference whether you shape the pipe or attach it to the ground first, that seems to not work according to Rabbi Eliezer. Maybe that's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer that we're referring to. So we have to ask, Mani, Then, so now
we're saying it has to be according to Rabbi Eliezer in this brisa.
That's what we're saying. This brisa with the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer seems then that we have to say that the case of the pipe would not be according to Rabbi Eliezer. L'chora, it sounds like Rabbi Eliezer would say with the pipe doesn't matter whether it was shaped first or whether it was attached to the ground first. Either way, it's not makabel truma anymore, and therefore it shouldn't be considered a keli and it shouldn't pass the mikvah when water flows through it.
As opposed to over there.
Well, that's what we're saying. We started by saying that b'risa l'chora is not like Rabbi Eliezer or like the Chachamim. Now that we established which opinion of Rabbi Eliezer contradicts it, now we're going to go back to the question and see why can't we make that b'risa work according to either one of them? Mani, e Rabbi Eliezer, after the Chachokor l'seifoi. So now we can ask, who is that b'risa about the pipe like? If it's according to Rabbi Eliezer, then Rabbi Eliezer should say it doesn't matter even if the pipe was first shaped and then attached to the ground, it would still not be makabel truma anymore, according to him, just like the board attached to the wall. And according to the Rabbanon, it shouldn't matter, even if it was first attached to the ground and then shaped, the same way as they say that the board is still makabel truma, and they don't seem to be distinguishing whether the board is shaped and smoothed out and whatever before it's attached to the wall or not. Conceivably, you could have that you take a raw board and you attach it to the wall and then you sand it down and paint it and whatever and to make it a keli, and still the Chachamim are saying it's makabel truma. So according to them, in the case of the pipe, shouldn't matter. It should be makabel truma either way. So the answer is La'olam Rabbi Eliezer. No, we can answer that the braisa about the pipe does in fact work according to Rabbi Eliezer. V'shaini pshute kleyeh, the Tumah d'Rabbanan. Because the difference is, when it comes to the whole concept that a flat wooden board is able to be makabel tumah, only applies midrabbanan anyway.
Do we know that?
No, but that? Now we're pointing that out. But we're going to see. We're going to see how that fits with the matter of the pipe. But wait. The point is, in other words, the Torah tells us the various materials from which things are made that can be makabel truma. When it comes to wooden kalim, right, it has to have a klee kibble. It has to be something that's able to hold, that's something that's able to contain things. So a flat wooden board is not makabel truma. The only way it can be makabel truma is midrabanan. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer might say okay, so fine, midrabanan can be makabel truma when it's not attached to the wall. But once it's attached to the wall, then that ability to be makabel truma will go away. Tosfos actually discusses at some length over here. It's not so simple. Actually, there are cases where flat wooden board is able to be makabel truma if it's roi l'midras, if it's something that's meant for sitting or standing or whatever. Well, a chair, for example, yeah. Tosfos discusses a little bit about a table, because a table, not even necessarily that you'd lean on the table per se, but a table is meant to put your dishes and whatever on, your food on, when you directly use it.
And therefore
it's makabel truma.
What is this? We're talking about the
table. But it's flat. The table is flat.
No, but there's a difference between whether you use you if you're using it. Meshamish adam vs meshamish adam is the expression Tosfos quotes that you yourself directly use it, for example, for midras, or that you use it for something which you use, for example, dishes. In this case, for example, whether you're using it for kneading the dough or whether you're using it for displaying the baked bread already, that's not considered Masham She'adam.
And therefore, business.
Yes. No, not so much that it's Masham She'adam business, but it's not Masham She'adam Kalin, per se.
It is Masham She'adam Kalin.
No, when you're displaying the bread on it for sale, that's not Masham She'adam bread.
No, but when you use it for dishes and things like that.
No, that's what we're saying. That's a table for a couple of times. Yeah.
Even if you're kneading on it, would you call that Masham She'adam?
Apparently not.
Huh. If you're kneading on it,
okay. I mean, the truth is, Tosfos says it's not so simple. It might even be that even those things, such as a table, that are makabel truma, even though we have a pasuk for it, maybe that pasuk is only in a smachta, and maybe really, as our Gemara is saying over here, there is never any case except for tumas midras where flat wooden keli is able to be makabel truma. Okay. Anyway, so therefore, Rabbi Eliezer might argue, therefore, that when it comes to the zach shall not toim him, he'll be mekel, but maybe not with a pipe. Well, the question now becomes the klal d'shiva d'araisa. Does that mean you're telling me that the soul of mayim shuvim in a mikveh is d'araisa? Well, kaimalon d'rabanan, but we know for a fact that soul is only d'rabanan. Now, okay, so here we have, this is again, we mentioned at the beginning that the Rashbam argues with everybody else, with all the other Rishonim, about what kind of soul of Mayim Shogum are we dealing with over here. According to the Rashbam, again, we're talking about over here a mikveh that's a full-fledged mikveh, it's got 40 saw of Meg Shomim. Now Mayim Shogum starts flowing into it. Once you have more Mayim Shogum than you had originally Meg Shomim, then it will become possible. Now, that, the Rashbam says, that concept is only the Rabbanim. With the Raisa, if you have Mayim Shogun flowing into a mikveh, every little bit that flows in will become bottled. You have, 40 saw of water, you have one saw flows in, it'll become bottled. Another saw flows in, it'll also become bottled. The concept that we say eventually 41 saw have flowed in where there were 40 saw to begin with, and now you have 81 saw, 41 of Mayim Shogun and 40 of Meik Shomim, that'll be bottled. That's only the Rabbanim. Well, then, that's Daraisa, it wouldn't be a problem because you had 40 saw make shamim to begin with. According to everybody else, even midrabanan, that's not possible. As long as you have 40 saw make shamim, doesn't matter how much mayim shogun goes in.
3 times, 4 times.
Yes, it doesn't matter. So according to them, rather the question is the whole concept of mayim shogun being possible for a mikveh is only the rabbanan. Midaraisa, you could have. There's a couple of different nuances about it among different Rishonim. Is it that we're saying that even you have a mikveh could be made l'chila all out of Mayim Shovim? Are we talking about the concept where if you have less than 40 saw Meg Shomim and Mayim Shovim starts flowing into it, it won't passel it? Whatever. The point is that whatever soul of Mayim Shovim we're dealing with over here in our Sovia is only Dirabanan. So if you're going to tell me Rabbi Eliezer is going to be Mako on Dinim Dirabanan, which by the Dachshon Atomim, why shouldn't he be Mako by the pipe as well? Whatever soul of Mayim Shovim we're dealing with in the connection with the pipe is also Dirabanan. And yet he seems to be, and yet the Braita is Machmer on it. So it seems the Braita still doesn't work according to Rabbi Eliezer. And again, it doesn't work according to the Chachamim either, because according to the Chachamim, in the case of the Dachshon Atomim, they're not Mekel at all. So there shouldn't be Mekel on the pipe, even if it was attached to the ground to begin with.
Dachshon Atomim, it means the... It means the
baker's board. Baker's board.
They were not...
The Chachamim weren't distinguishing whether it was first sanded down and whatever before it was attached to the wall or after.
Or vice versa,
yeah. Void, and not only that, you can't understand the machlokas of the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer like that anyway, that it's dealing with Tumah Drabanan. Ha'omer Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina b'daf shamachas machlokas. Because Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina says that the machlokas actually involves a metal board. Metal is makabel tumah, whether it's a kli kibble or not. Even a flat metal board is makabel tumah, is makabel tumah b'deraita. So if you're talking about a metal board, and we see that Rabbi Eliezer is allowing you to have it, yes, so you have something which is Makabal Truma, but then you attach it to the wall, and according to him, it's not Makabal Truma anymore. Well, again, by the same logic, then, you should say that the pipe doesn't matter, even if it was first made into a pipe, or even if it was first made with a trap in it, like Tosfos said, and then you attach it to the ground, it should still be okay.
Just because you attach it
to the ground, right. Because the ground is not Makabal Truma, and therefore neither is. And again, the Chachamim would be saying that, no, it's still Makabal Truma. And again, they should therefore be saying in the case of the pipe. La'olam Rabbanani. So no, rather we have to answer that the braisa about the pipe is according to the Rabbanan. The shiny shiva, the Rabbanan. So yes, in that case, exactly like we just said, the psul of Mayim Shovim is only the Rabbanan. Therefore, the Chachamim will be mako and say that if the pipe was first attached to the ground and then carved out to make a pipe or a channel or whatever, then it won't possible to make it, because the whole concept of Shovim is only the Rabbanan anyway. Or the whole concept of Shovim, or that Shovim can overpower a mikveh, like the Rashbam says, whatever, whichever soul of Shovim.
If you attach it first, and then you...
And then you make it into a pipe, make the trap in it, or whatever, then it would be okay. Because the soul of Shovim that we're dealing with over here is only the Rabbanim. But in the case of the Dapshal Machtoimim, where you're talking Tumah D'Oraisa, because the metal board, then they can't be made on that. Problem is, but if you're going to explain like that, then you should argue, fine, if it's Drabanan, if Shuvim is Drabanan, and therefore the Drabanan are Mekel, what's the difference? So if you shape the pipe first and then attach it to the ground, why shouldn't they be Mekel in that case also and say it's okay?
Rather than saying
that it depends whether it was attached to the ground first and then carved out.
They believe that because it's attached, it's going to be not the Kabbalah Tumah.
Okay, but if they're saying that if they're saying we're going to be makel when it comes to the pipe, because we're talking only an Indian that I bought it anyway, then it should be both ways. Exactly. The answer is no. Shiny Hossam, Deka Torah, Kli Olav Batolush. No, because since if it has the shape and the dinim of a keli at first, before it was attached to the ground, the Chachamim don't want to be makel to that extent. To say that it should be considered that you have a keli which can be used to make mayim shuvim, and now you're attaching it to the ground and it should become ois keli and not be considered shuvim, they're not going to go that far. If it was attached to the ground first and then shaped, fine, we'll be makel because it's only derabanan anyway, and it never had the shape and the dinim of a keli while it was still detached anyway. So fine, we'll be makel on that. But to go so far as to say that if it's the shape of a keli and it has a kli kibble first and then you attach it to the ground, say that then it's ois kli, no, they're not going to do that. So yes, they will distinguish which came first. Okay, now Rabbi Yosef asks a side question. Going back, okay, no, not really a side question. Now we're getting back to actually, okay, so we finished with the thing of the pipe then, so we've established then the maskana that the din of the pipe is not according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's actually according to the Chachamim who disagree with him. But they will be makel when it comes to Shuvim, which is the Rabbanan. What we still have so far, Rabbi Eliezer will say anything that's attached to the ground is considered like the ground, and the Chachamim who will argue and say it depends. So now Rabbi Yosef asks, here's another question as far as the Dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. We have a general concept in the Dinim of Tumah V'Tahara, most of Masechet Machshirin in Seder Taharos is based on this concept, that if you have water, in order for food to be Mekabel Tumah, it has to become wet with one of the Shiva Mashkim. For that to happen, it has to be that the water was detached from the ground or from something attached to the ground. It has to have been detached berotza. It has to be that you wanted that water to be detached. Yeah, we've talked about it sporadically here and there. In other words, for example, you have examples in Mishnayos over there in Machshir, and you have examples over there. Let's say, for example, you took your animal down to a river to drink. So fine, the water that gets on its mouth, obviously you wanted that water to be picked up out of the river, let's say. What about, for example, if its feet get wet with the water? Is that something you wanted them to get wet? Maybe yes, you wanted to clean off you wanted to give the animal a bath while you're at it. Or maybe not. Maybe you didn't particularly want the animal's feet to get wet.
That's midrabanan.
No, it's midaraita. All that concept.
That water, which is on its feet, which you didn't want.
Then it wouldn't be machshir than the kabbal tumah. That's one of many, many examples. Like I say, you'd have to learn Masechet Machshirin and has any number of examples of this kind of thing, where you have water that went from one place to another, but you didn't necessarily want it to go.
Someone else wants
it. No, it has to be that you the one who caused it to become detached, or your animal or whatever, are the one whose machshava makes it happen or doesn't happen.
If you put something in water and it splashes and it
so that's not necessarily solution, but often it's not necessarily right. So whatever, like I say, I don't remember all the details over there, but you have, you can look at the Mishnayos over there if you want. There's any number of examples over there. Okay, so make shomim shechoshev aleim ladiach haseit droiblin mahu. Okay, so now what happens if you have it raining? And you have in mind that you want that rain, which is falling, should also wash off the tzroibelin. The tzroibelin of our Mishnah, the circular thing around the millstones, or the bottom millstone, or whatever, or the frame, or whatever it is. You wanted that tzroibelin to get washed off by the rain. Mahu lizroim. Now, what's the din then about? Would that rain, if that water that fell on the tzroibelin, if it then goes and makes fruit wet, would that fruit be mukshel kabel tumah? The point of the question being that if we're saying that the droibelin is considered attached to the ground, well, if water is on something attached to the ground, it's still not machshel kabel tumah. To be machshel kabel tumah, it has to be that detached from the ground.
How can you have a kavanah about something that's natural, like water coming from the rain?
You still can. You still can. We learned we learned back in Bava Metzia, for example. We had a short thing about this, for example, that you had fruit up on your roof to dry out or whatever. You put the fruit there. The dew comes naturally, and it depends whether you had in mind. Okay, but it's the same similar idea over here. You want the droibelin to get wet or not. That's considered
if you have a tree with fruits.
No, as long as the fruits are attached to the ground, they can't be machshir. They can't be machshir kabel tumah anyway. Otherwise, everything is machshir kabel tumah. Every crop gets watered at some point. No, we're talking about after the fruit is detached. Okay, we'll have to continue with this. We'll have to continue with the details of this tomorrow because it's something deep to get into. But that's the basic concept. I'll look up more of Masechta Machshirin tomorrow, Bez Hashem, to give you some more examples. But that's the basic concept. Is it has to be your machshava is what makes it is what creates the hetcher or not.
Where do we take that from?
We take it from that the pasuk says like this: v'chiyutan mayim al zera. The pasuk says if water is placed on a seed, the nafam and uvlasam olav, and then a nevela of a dead animal falls on it or whatever, then it becomes tummy. From the word yutan, we learn that it has to be that you intended for it to be placed. We actually discussed in the Gemara and Bar Mitzvah over there, we had yitain versus yutan. Yitain would mean you actually have to place it. Yutan would mean it shall be placed. The combination of those two, the fact that it's spelt yitain, but pronounced yutan, teaches us that it's fine even if it happened on its own without your direct intervention, as long as you wanted it to happen, as long as you had kavana, right? So we'll talk about it tomorrow, Beth Hashem, and we'll get back into this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.